Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
The wood chopping arena is not just for the guys these days. Amanda Beams is the captain of the Australian ladies team. I caught up with her at the Royal Easter Show to find out when, as a young girl, she realised she wanted to be a wood chopper.
I spent most of my early years as a young girl behind the fence at the wood chopper arena, barracking for Dad. And in those days, girls weren't allowed in the arena. And it wasn't heard of girls being in the arena. And it certainly shows how far we've come to today where, it's quite common for girls to compete in the arena.
So how old were you when you finally got to get to the other side of the fence?
I was probably 16 when I started. I started Jack and Jill Soaring with a male partner, which is now my husband. Whether that means anything or not, but it's a good way to pick up boys. And we started out Jack and Jill Soaring, and from then we've evolved to Jill Soaring, Jill and Jill Soaring, Jill Underhands, and ultimately the Australian ladies team.
So if the girls and the guys were to go head-to-head, how competitive are the girls?
In this sort of wood, this hard wood, you're going to have a real big difference between the girls and the guys. And guys, it's nothing that we don't know. Guys are stronger than girls. But, we can hold our own against our own, and just like the guys do, I guess.
And are there particular strengths that you find the female competitors have?
In the sport of wood chopping, you've got to have technique more so than strength. And that gets you a long way. So it's not all about strength, but, you've got to have technique and timing.
Mm-hmm. And what do you love about it?
Oh, for me, it's very much a family sport. My sons both compete. My husband, I go back home, and my dad, my husband's dad was a competitor, my uncle. It's just a family sport for us. But when you get here, I think I've been here, we rocked in here yesterday, and all we've done is talk to everyone else who we haven't seen for a few months or so, and you just catch up and they all become friends, and it's a camaraderie and it's just what this place creates for us.
And how are you going to go this year, do you reckon?
I'm not one to boast or anything like that, but I think it'll be tough competition, as it always is here in Sydney. And for some unknown reason, when the Australian girls all get together, we gel very well, and we are a hard unit to beat.
What are people often surprised about? Are there some certain myths or misconceptions that people have about female woodchoppers?
We have our own domain to cut in. We have our own events to cut in. And ultimately, I guess we want to beat each other. I know for a fact that competing against the guys, I'm still going to be out there cutting a long time after they've finished. There is 180 guys and girls here wood chopping this year at the show, and we're all out here so that everyone can come along and watch us, and we cut much better when we've got a big crowd.
And whatever you do, don't say anything mean or nasty to
No. No, I had my polite face on. The footage was hard to miss and even harder to forget. An inland tsunami sweeping cars down a Toowoomba street. You probably saw it. Well, a guy from Scripture Union working with chaplains in Toowoomba pulled his phone out to capture the spectacle on video as it was happening outside his office window. What he didn't realise was that that footage that he shot would become part of international news and would unfold as a tragedy that swept through his region. His role in chaplaincy would also take on extra significance as well. David Judson, so good to talk to you. Can you take us to that moment when the street outside your office started flooding one day?
Yeah, well, I just returned to work after the Christmas holidays and was just catching up on life and, emptying the email box and making lots of phone calls. And as I was on the phone, just looking out the window, listening to the downpour of rain on the roof, this little creek at the back of my work, it would rise when there's just a small amount of water. But on this particular day, it went to a level that I'd never seen it before. And that's when I pulled out my phone and thought, I'll film this and show my wife when I get home from work.
No clue of what that was actually going to turn into.
No, that's right. And that, you know, when we were able to get out of the building and talk to people in the surrounding businesses that and hear, listen to the TV, that we knew that this was something much bigger than just a local event.
It's, yeah, I understand initially you're just taking that phone out to take video for your wife and for your friends in Brisbane to show what was going on. But I guess when you started to see cars flying by you, what were you thinking?
It's hard to explain, you know. When you see that kind of stuff with your eyes, it's hard to make what you're seeing reality in your mind. You know, it is quite horrific. I mean, we were incredibly thankful that, you know, none of the cars that we saw, you know, had people in them. But, you know, they were just because it was a massive car park. But, you know, elsewhere and throughout the city, you know, there were cars that were washed away that had people, you know, trapped inside. So, you know, your mind can't help but mourn and grieve for them and for their families that were lost.
So what was your response after that? Did you go into chaplain mode?
Yeah, in a way, I you know, you automatically, that's your automatic reflex is to support and help, you know, people. And, you know, immediately afterwards, there were a lot of people who, you know, flooded the car park to find their cars and you know, speaking to ladies from the work next door who, you know, couldn't find their cars. And I suppose in the days that followed, my wife and I were able to get into the city and help some of the businesses clean up the mud and the muck and the mess from their businesses, and we brought in our team of chaplains through from the valley and from the Toowoomba district, I suppose, to debrief. And I mean, at the moment, at that stage, they were still on holidays, but pretty much all of them, you know, dropped their Christmas holiday and went into chaplain mode. Yeah.
Where is it today in Toowoomba? How are things? I'm here in sunny Sydney for most of it, and I'm sure it's not the case. Business as usual, we've moved on. I don't think we even would probably think much about our brothers and sisters in Queensland. But for you in Toowoomba now, what is it like?
You know, people are incredibly resilient, and Toowoomba as a whole has moved on. You know, there are still empty shells of businesses that remain, and down in the valley, you know, in Grantham and those communities like Murphy's Creek, you know, there's still a lot of devastation and people who may never be able to rebuild or move back into those communities. You know, there is still a lot of grief and loss and you know, for many of us, when we return to the place that we were, you know, the scene of that, the terrible floods, you know, you do get overwhelmed with emotion and regret and fear, you know, even within the school communities. Like our chaplains talk about how each time there is a rain event, you know, the school community, the children become quite fearful and, you know, is it going to happen again?
Yeah. And I guess you've had plenty of attention from news networks when your footage went viral, David, but when did this documentary crew show up?
Yeah, they showed up about a month ago or so. You know, there has been an incredible amount of interest in the footage and in the story behind it. But yeah, this documentary, The Hope in the Summer of Sorrow, is probably one of the documentary that I am most excited about, because it goes beyond the mere horror of the footage that I was able to take, but applies that to how we've been able to help young people and indeed whole communities to recover from the flood. And, you know, the guys were able to connect and talk to the chaplains on the ground and talk and hear the stories that of what chaplains do, you know, every single day in supporting young people and caring for their communities. And I suppose it's an event such as this kind of tragic flood that highlights the need and the real issues that are out there in the community and the real difference the chaplains can make.
Dave, just great to talk to you this morning, and looking forward to seeing this documentary. It's airing on Good Friday on Channel 7 at 3:30, if you're around on Good Friday.
I think it's midday.
Midday, sorry, and 3:30 on the Christian channel.
That's right.
The wrong way around. So you can catch it on Channel 7, and all the info is at christiantelevision.org.au. We'll pop it up on our website as well. Thank you so much for sharing your story, and also for being part of this doco as well. I'm sure it's not good to relive that all the time, but thank you for doing that again for us.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, what a story. Looking forward to seeing the documentary, Hope in the Summer of Sorrow, put on by the Christian Television Australia Mob, and Carl Faze. Our Carl Faze is hosting that as well.
Yeah, following the journey of chaplains in the wake of a series of disastrous events in Queensland over the last few months.
He was in Plagiarise. It is no more. Now there is just Jake. That's just Jake. I don't think that will catch on. I'm glad. No. Jake, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having me. It's good to be here. It really is.
Now, time has passed since those sad final concerts.
I know. But, how sad?
Well, no, it was sad. Look, it was cool. It gave us another excuse to give the songs a few more spins as well.
Hey, which I'm appreciative of.
That's fine.
Thank you.
Happy to do that. Also really glad that you're keeping at it with the solo gig.
Yeah.
Drive us through that chain from when you finished up with Plagiarise to where you are now with your first single, On The Way.
Yeah, totally. Well, we finished up in October last year, had some final shows, like you said. Really good. It was one of those moments where you're like, oh, do we have to stop? You know, like, so cool. So did that, and I just really feel like, cliche, but I've just got more to kind of say, more to sing about, and I just love it, you know. I do lots of stuff during the week with music as well, not just playing and recording or whatever, but yeah, just love it. So I decided, let's just make some songs.
Yeah.
And hopefully people still like them, you know?
You can only
that's
hope.
Always,
that's the positive.
Yeah, what do you feel like your music's got to say when you say you've got more to say with it?
Yeah, I just think music is, I think it's stronger than we give it credit for, just in the way it can really just kind of hit someone where it's at, where they're at, you know? It's just, it's an opportunity to say something. And we've found in the past with Plagiarise, I've found with a few people that I've already shown this song to. You guys are like the first, by the way.
Ooh.
How special.
Very special. But yeah, you know, it just some people just really get impacted by the message and just the vibe. I mean, you don't even have to be singing about something like maybe what they're exactly going through, but they can relate to it. And before you know it, people are singing your lyrics, and it's just crazy. It really is. Yeah.
How does the heart on the sleeve kind of stuff go? Because there's got to be a cost in your song, in this song. It's really so much of you in there. How do you deal with that? Especially if someone was to, oh, they would never, but, you know, didn't like it or didn't relate or something. How do you kind of manage all of that as a person being so in a song?
Yeah. I think, you know, when you're writing a song, you just write it. It's your thing. If people don't quite connect to it or like it, I mean, that's any art, isn't it? Really?
Yeah.
You know, you move on and whatever. But I guess being a good songwriter is about trying to get people where they're at, and that's what you try and do. And, you know, it's sort of like you're almost writing a song for other people's benefit in a way. You know, you're kind of doing what you love, but you're also hoping a bunch of people can relate to it as well, and that's what you're hoping for.
Yeah. And we're coming into the world's longest weekend.
Yes.
This weekend.
I've heard about that.
Yes.
I've heard
what
about
are you
it.
Up to for Easter? Anzac Day.
Well, it's Thursday. Heading up to Easterfest.
Great.
Good.
So I'm
good.
Playing, I'm doing what most Christian artists are doing, go to Easterfest. So I'm playing up there, I think, like four times. They make you work hard.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, good. I'm coming in for an interview today. I think I'm doing one more after this. That's only two. They're going to play four times, and man. Yeah, big. So I'm looking forward to that. But it'll be tiring.
A bit lonely. Is that an adjustment?
Yeah, still adjusting.
Yeah.
I haven't done too many shows. I've done just a couple of things. Purposely didn't want to play too much live before I kind of really established myself and my sound and all that stuff. So still adjusting. I'll let you know how it goes next time I'm back.
And you've got a bit of a freebie up for grabs as well?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I've got a bit of a thing going on online at jakenorner.com. People can jump on there before the 1st of May, which is when I release my single. And, yeah, they can get a free download. If they, all they have to do is click that little like button you see. On the site, you know, the Facebook.
There's
like
the catch.
Thing.
There's the catch.
That's what you're going to do. So, jakedonald.com, you get a free download before the 1st of May of Here With You, which is the new single.
Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.